Here it is. It is what it is. And this is the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in for Season 3 of the Wisco Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Wisco, and also back with me for Season 3 is co-host Kelly Cruz. Kelly, hello, how are you?
Hey, Wisco, doing good.
What have you been doing in the off-season?
Besides working and taking care of kids, seeing my acupuncturist, feeling a little bit more zen.
Acupuncturist? Why are you seeing an acupuncturist? I can't even say that.
Well, my husband calls me a bit of a lemon, so I have a lot of things going on. a lemon law.
Yeah, I was going to say, like lemon law in the car
business.
Exactly.
Okay. Good segue. So there's always, shoulder, neck tension from working at a desk and typing all day. So acupuncture gives you time to focus on yourself and calm some of the muscles.
Season 3, Kel, we're going to be doing something a little bit different, but I think for the better. I was at the convention center in Las Vegas for NADA 2018, and that was a pretty phenomenal experience.
Tell us about what you got to do there and some of the people you got to meet.
Have you ever seen the movie Anchorman?
Yes.
Okay, so you know how like
Ron Burgundy.
Yeah, so you know like how they in 1 and 2 they had these fight scenes in which then they had their groups of gangs and they're representing their own channel or news media outlet.
Yep.
That's like NADA 2018. You had a lot of vendors.
Sure, it wasn't WWF?
No, because you had there were teams here, right? Like every vendor had a team of their own, company employees. In which everyone was all dressed the same, if they were wearing like a polo shirt or a tie, mm-hmm. Everyone's usually kind of dressed in a coat and tie. But if you weren't in a coat and tie, then you were in a polo shirt. If you were in a polo shirt, then you were in some kind of T-shirt. But everything was uniform to like represent your company and your clan.
Right.
To which then after that, it was like then you had to aggressively go after, business, if that were dealers, if that were individual people or whatever the case. But I found it, this is my second time going to an NADA, but it's always funny to see how going through, walking down the aisles, everyone is like literally catcalling you to come over to their booth so they can talk to you and pitch their product to you.
Right. About how many people usually attend the conference?
Oh boy, I would say there was easily... 6,000-7,000, if not more, 10,000.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. If when they talk about how the automotive industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry, when you see the booth setups by some of these companies, that's where you definitely can quantify the billions of dollars, circulating in the automotive industry. Mm-hmm. So
very cool.
As part of my time out in Vegas, I had the chance to interview quite a lot of people. And the first guest here that we're going to talk about is a venture capitalist who has his venture fund in which they're investing in a lot of different companies in the automotive space. So let's introduce our guest here for episode number 1 of season 3.
We have to make the consumer experience at the dealership better. It has to happen, and it's going to happen. And it's either going to be you're kicking and screaming to get there, or some of these folks are going to go out of business.
The car business, or better yet, automotive retail, has been and will continue to see disruption in the way that customers interact with a dealership to buy and service their cars. And within any industry, if you follow the money, you can begin to hedge your operation with a keen and practical eye on how to stay relevant, competitive, and profitable in the future. And as Chase Fraser explains, it's all in the ability to analyze data in order to optimize the consumer experience.
So to make this a positive, you can make the consumer experience far better with this data. And so how do you do it in a mindful way that doesn't seem big brotherish, that you walk into a store, whether you're buying a vehicle or whether you're having the vehicle serviced, but it it causes you to have a better experience. That's my goal. I want consumers to have phenomenal experiences at dealerships.
My guest for this episode is venture capitalist Chase Fraser of Fraser McCombs Capital. Investing in new technologies and business models in the automotive space, he and his team of investors of OEMs and dealer groups have put their money where their mouths are as they have invested and are continually looking to invest in areas from dealer services to on-demand services to intelligent vehicle systems to financial technologies and to big data and predictive analytics. And while a geographic location such as Silicon Valley weighs into his investment decision-making process, Chase believes the secret sauce is truly the people behind the startup.
The valley is overheated. It got overheated about 18 months ago. Mm-hmm. We'll look at deals in the valley, but
with a cautious eye.
For two reasons. One, they're too expensive. And two, we like kind of middle America car people, guys that have been there and done that.
So that's Chase Fraser. I found him to be a very thoughtful and calculated kind of individual. Hopefully, if you were able to tell, Kel, the way that he likes to talk, he's very much measuring his words. I don't know if you got that sense about him as well.
Yeah, he seems to be a thoughtful business person, and probably, you know, once we hear more about it, but kind of a background of how he got to where he is, but also thoughtful, like you said, in the way that he expresses things now, because once it's on the record, you know, it's out there. So how did he kind of get to where he is, or did he talk about his mentors or influencers?
Well, so he actually did get his start. It's kind of interesting, his background. So he was the principal of a wooden pallet company, of all things.
What is that?
Well, wooden pallets.
Like paint? Like paint?
No.
Pallets?
Well, actually, what I believe to be wooden pallets, just, you know, if you go to a Home Depot and you have all these washer and dryers that are on a wooden pallet rack, or if you go to any dock, you'll see, you know, huge wooden pallet racks.
Okay.
of products, kind of thing.
Got it.
So he was a principal of a wooden pallet company, which went public. This was back in the 90s. Then eventually he worked in the automotive space for a company he founded and sold, which was called MarketView 360. And it was a kind of a data CRM type company for dealerships to help them market and sell the services of the service department.
Mm.
The other thing that's also interesting about him, which is where this name of Fraser McCombs Capital came from, was one of his mentors was Red McCombs. And Red McCombs is apparently not only is he a billionaire.
And it has a really cool name.
And a really cool name. Red McCombs. Actually, I think it goes like Billy Joel, BJ Red McCombs, I think is his name. But he's not only is McCombs a billionaire, but he also had his hand in founding 400 companies.
Wow.
And he had part ownership in the San Antonio Spurs, the Denver Nuggets, the Minnesota Vikings, and then also was the co-founder of Clear Channel Communications.
I love his stories. Sometimes I'll sit down with him, and I think it's going to be a five-minute conversation, and 4 hours later, and it's just stories. I mean, after 90 years, you pick up some good stories.
Yeah.
And Red ran hard at one point in his life. He was a bit of a wild man, and he's a kind man. He's a visionary.
A wild man, Red McCombs was, but Chase, on the other hand, is very much a private individual. And as a matter of fact, in preparation for this interview, as I was trying to Google him, there's not much about him around.
With what I'm doing now, that's got to change, bluntly. I got to be a little bit more out there. I believe what we're doing is incredible. I think we're one of the only groups that invests both out in, you know, call it auto tech, but also focused on the dealer. I actually looked at BP, Optimus Ride.
VIA is so cool.
A company called Aurora Labs. We've got an investment in a company called Keeps. That's why we like the Vroom deals.
Other companies Fraser McCombs Capital has invested in include a fintech company called AutoPay. There's AutoTox, Confident Financial Solutions, Frontier Car Group, and even a voice company called Mycroft. And with 17,000 franchise dealers and another 40,000 independent dealers, in order for a company to survive and advance, there is a fundamental question that has to be asked, Kelly, and that is, are you a tech company in the auto space, or are you an automotive company in the tech space? And if you're thinking of being a tech company in the auto space, then you may be on the wrong side of history, as was the case of BP, the online peer-to-peer marketplace.
We looked at them early when they were blowing and going and were raising lots of money at outrageous valuations. Okay. We also looked at them right at the end when they were at bankruptcy, and do you try to buy the assets out of that whole process? We passed on both. BP's fundamental problem was it was born out of the valley. And they were always anti-dealer from day one, and were going to change everything. And as I walked around the room, there was one car guy, and there were 120 employees, maybe more at that point. It just wasn't going to work. You have to have car DNA in these deals in order for them to be successful.
And the first thing then you should do is
put your dealer hat on for a sec.
And after that, you can start to innovate like Elon Musk's Tesla.
I'll tell you a deal we just did that I love. It's a company out of Israel. We've actually done three deals, well, two and a half deals, if you count VIA. We like Israel. It's a company called Aurora Labs. And going back to Tesla, I use them as an example a lot because they do some cool stuff. The ability to do over-the-air updates. So much like your cell phone setting right here, it updates when it's plugged in. You know, it either hits your Wi-Fi or it's updating, you know, whenever. Teslas do the same thing. So you're parked in the garage and they have over-the-air updates to software upgrades. Other manufacturers don't. I mean, as all the dealer folks on the phone know, you got to pull in, you got to throw the car up on the rack, you got to plug into the OBD and do the update that way in most cases. This company is going to allow us to do what Tesla does, which is to literally have over-the-air updates. It's pretty incredible because it can go two ways. So put your dealer hat on for a sec. Not only am I going to know that I had to put this patch or this download onto this person's vehicle, I actually want to upload data as well. So I'm going to know some really interesting service data. And what I ultimately want to do with this company is be able to take that data and take it back to the dealership. So when I wake up the next morning after my vehicle has been serviced,
this is a pretty cool topic because I think about cars I've had in the past where I had a navigation system. And a few years in, or a couple years into having the car, you're getting directions and you end up at a dead end. And it's because the system hasn't updated to know that the roads have changed. And then it's like, well, order the CD and update the car. And I just stopped getting navigation systems, especially once cell phones became more advanced. Because it's like, why do I want to deal with updating something?
Well, and the next evolution of that was what he talked about, these OBD, what's called the onboard diagnostic, where they plug in a tool and then that's what provides your updates to the software in the vehicle. So then now with Aurora Labs, now we're talking about over-the-air updates, which A, is cool.
Yeah.
But B, there is something a bit unsettling, at least initially, that I have with that. And it's just the whole idea of data, right? Like that is somebody that is involuntarily, at least, you know, quote unquote, maybe allegedly involuntarily, capturing data of my driving habits. Now, I think at the end of the day, as we evolve as a society, we will definitely be more comfortable with that. But I, as a very strong proponent of Fourth Amendment rights, now, of course, that applies to more government. But in this particular case, there's still a level of, of my privacy not being private anymore, because all of that information, while on one hand, I do get the great updates on the car, but on the other hand, that is also my data that's being shared, to which, okay, that's it. The fact that it could be used to my advantage, I wouldn't even think it's being used against me, but it's being used to my advantage. That's great. But there's, again, something still unsettling, the fact that that data that this manufacturer has or the dealer has, I don't know. Again, just a bit unsettling.
Yeah, it depends what they're pulling from the car. I think if they're looking at levels of fluids and mileage and other things like that, you would think that's pretty innocuous. And weighing the pros and cons, it'd be great to have something pop up that says exactly what's needed and why. So a lot of times your light goes on, but you don't really know what it, you know, depending on how old your car is, what the light means. And then, you know, if that could ping them to then call you and set it up, it makes it easier. I don't have to put a reminder in my calendar to call the dealership. If they're, you know, if it's a GPS type signal and they're tracking where you're going and where you're at, that's a little scary.
But you do bring up a point, which is what Chase said, and that's the whole idea of the lead generation part of it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely that is the one big, gray area of when you do get messages from a dealership of your car needing service. They don't really know if your car does need service. But if all of a sudden there is that data that they can pull from, which, you know, if it's oil change or if it's, you know, tires, yeah, like they're just going to possess all this big data, as they call it now, mm-hmm. that they can interpret all this and provide the dealer another, you know, not even a it's a strong indication of revenue that a dealer can bank on.
Right.
The other point that he actually does start to eventually talk about is, and what I talk about as well, is the data. Who owns that data?
Without a doubt, that is the number one problem to what I'm talking about. It's who owns the data, starting with you as the individual. Is it your data? The OEMs, at least in my circles of OEMs I'm talking to, they feel like they own at least a big part of that data.
And here you have this automotive menage a trois of who owns the rights to the data of this vehicle. Is it the manufacturer? Is it the dealer? Is it the vendor? And with more and more autonomous cars being on the road, be it on the public transportation end, or if it's on the ride sharing end, the ride hailing, that means that ownership of vehicles will start to go down, which all of a sudden you may have dealers becoming a voyeur in this world we live in. And that's certainly a possibility, because if you do start to take a look at other areas of private and public use, you can start to see that there are these other areas that are adopting autonomous cars.
We like to, in the beginning, we like low speed autonomy. And so we just did a deal in Boston. There were some really smart guys out of MIT that put together a company called Optimus Ride. Yeah. And what they're doing is low speed shuttles. So think about a big university campus, not quite buses. You're at Disney World, and instead of having the tram move you around, you've got these autonomous, less than 20 miles an hour vehicles.
So Kelly, I know this is going to be something near and dear to your heart. So we're talking about autonomous shuttles at a place such as Disneyland, which you often frequent. Are you pro or against that?
The autonomous shuttles?
Yes.
All about it, as long as they're safe.
Well, now take the shuttle concept from a place like Disneyland, increase the speed of it so that you can now cater to a bigger service area in terms of, let's say, you know, square miles, And then you have something with what Chase calls an above-ground subway.
Via is so cool. It's originally some Israeli military technology.
Oh.
This guy is off the charts. Brilliant.
You know, immediately when you say Israeli technology, you know, we're talking about, Mossad level kind of highly targeted kind of technology.
Yeah, and originally it was logistics. It was moving people and things around. Well, he took that technology and picture Manhattan, if you will, and you've got a grid, you know, east, west, north, south. He figured out a way, I call it an above ground subway. So you've got all these Suburbans running all up and down.
Okay.
And you say, hey, I want to go to this location. It tells you that the next Suburban is going to be at this corner for 30 seconds. And it's a $5 flat fee. So you walk two blocks, you're on that corner, and it takes you where you want to go. And you're in a vehicle with another three people, four people, sometimes five people.
So one other thought about this idea of autonomous vehicles, it would be pretty cool to see it in the medical world or medical industry. Sometimes I think there's issues of how to transport, you know, blood or organs between hospitals and trying to get them there quickly and in a safe manner. And oftentimes you don't have staff available. And so if you can get some type of roadway, but pathway available to get the organs, the blood into a safe, locked, transportable, you know, type vehicle. You know, you don't need staff, and then you get it to the location, you know, quickly and safely. It would be pretty cool.
I can almost see this dovetailing into how Amazon may deliver stuff. I mean, Amazon talking about drone delivery.
Hmm.
But what if now every time you ordered something from Amazon, it was, there's like this is in a lot of industrial type spaces and companies where you put your package in a little tube,
like
and
a cylinder.
Yeah, yep. And you send it through the whole shaft mailing system kind of thing.
Right, it's kind of like the old school at the bank where you'd go and see the teller, but you'd put it in the little hole and it would like suck it through quickly.
Yeah, right. So I could see autonomous vehicles almost having that type of application, but yeah, you know, be it medicine, be it technology, or be it the mail, autonomous vehicles. I think you're starting to also see and agree that there is a future for this. I actually did not think that there would be that much applications for autonomous vehicles, but certainly after, you know, talking with Chase and learning about some of the things as a result of it, there is a very strong likelihood that autonomous vehicles is unavoidable.
Well, if that idea is not already out there and someone decides to, take it from the Wisco Weekly podcast, you know where it came from.
Credit Kelly Cruz on that one.
I see a world where you've got vehicles everywhere sooner than you think, really. I think the technology is probably 90% there. I mean, obviously, you guys probably read this week with the Uber death.
Yes.
I mean, unfortunately, I think there's going to be more of that.
So let's talk about first this Uber death, this unfortunate incident that happened in Tempe, Arizona. There was an Uber autonomous vehicle. It was a Volvo XC90 that was traveling at approximately 40 miles per hour in a 45 zone. There was a camera on the exterior of the car showing what was in front of the car, and there was also a camera inside the car showing the driver. So there was a driver behind the wheel here, or there was a person behind the wheel. And this was an unfortunate incident that happened late at night, in which the vehicle was not able to pick up the person that was crossing the street. Autonomous vehicles use LIDAR in addition to radar.
Mm-hmm.
Radar uses radio waves. LIDAR uses light detection, or it stands for light detection and ranging systems. And so this is where sometimes the technology is close to being perfect, but it's not exactly perfect, right? Because again, the LIDAR was not able to pick up this woman who came out of the shadows to cross the street, in which that was really the and that was where the moment of impact happened.
Going forward, it's that, you know, if the technology is 90% there, it's that 10%. And that 10% is hard to kind of bridge. Mm-hmm. Call it 5 years that it's there.
Are we talking about level 5 autonomous cars yet?
I think the problem is not the technology. The problem is regulation. I think feds and states are going to be nervous. I think they're going to be slow to adopt. I think you'll have communities like Austin and San Francisco.
I do still believe that when it comes to autonomous vehicles, that Chase is absolutely right. The regulation is really one of the things that's probably holding back the full-scale implementation of autonomous vehicles.
Yeah, I would think that, too, there's kind of an infrastructure issue. You know, these conversations make me think about the Jetsons, which obviously a cartoon, but thinking, you know, the Jetsons was, I don't know, 30 years ago or something, but it was looking far ahead to the future. And then movies like Minority Report, where you see people getting in cars, they're not driving, but they're on roadways that are separate than the roadways we see today. And so I would think that over time, you know, not only are you going to have autonomous cars, but you're dealing with building an infrastructure that may only be for autonomous cars, so that you're lessening the likelihood of these types of things happening. You know, someone can't walk into a roadway that's, or, you know, some type of path that's, you know, not in the road. It's either elevated or it's a different pathway that there's no pedestrians.
Well, especially when you think of some of the bigger cities, I mean, if you would think of a place like Los Angeles, it'd be very tough to just blanketly say, hey, we're going to, you know, and again, let's just say we're 5 years into the future, as Chase says, or let's even fast forward more than, let's say we're 20 years into the future. You'd find it very difficult to see how the grid of LA would work out if you were not working with the city or the county to implement things like a different road, mm-hmm. or perhaps, you know, bus stops that are now have been eliminated because now they're adapting more towards autonomous shuttles, low speed shuttles, as he once referenced.
Right.
So then where are we going with all of this then? I mean, essentially then what does the dealership of the future look like if there are more autonomous cars taking up public and private roads, be it a university campus, be it city streets, you know, be it just a campus like Apple, like Google. If you are having more autonomous cars, you're certainly going to have a decrease in car ownership. If you're having a decrease in car ownership, the amount of cars being produced by the manufacturer is going to also decrease, which would then lower the amount of options and models and bells and whistles you can get in a vehicle. If you're having companies like an Aurora Labs that is performing over-the-air updates to a vehicle, and then therefore that vehicle doesn't necessarily need to go to the dealership in order to get serviced, where at the end of the day is all of this going? I mean, where is Chase hedging with his investments?
We're going to be investing in technologies that facilitate the dealer of the future.
Okay.
On a very broad note, I think dealers ultimately are places to have vehicles distributed. So instead of having a massive lot with 300 vehicles on the lot, I think you may not even have a lot, potentially, that the manufacturer actually delivers vehicle to the showroom. You show up as the consumer to pick up your vehicle. Mm-hmm. I think quickly you're going to do what Tesla does, which is you're going to configure your vehicle online. You're going to be able to... you know, maybe it takes 2 weeks, maybe it takes 2 months, but at some point that vehicle that you configured is delivered to the dealership, in kind of in quotations. The good news for the dealer is these vehicles have gotten so sophisticated and will continue to be so sophisticated that the guy that gets hurt in all this growth is Joe's Garage. It's the local guy who can't afford a $40,000 kit for the Audi A7. Mm-hmm. And not only that, he's not getting trained on all the new technology that would be in an Audi, as an example. So the dealer of the future is going to be a really, really big service center, And they're going to be doing, in my opinion, a lot more service business. It's going to be, and we all know for that audience, that that's very profitable gross margin business. You'll still sell cars through a dealership. It's just going to look a lot different.
You know, what could be very ironic about this future, Kelly, is that, you know, while Chase states that the future of the dealership looks more like a service center, you know, there's still something about buying and owning a car that's very much emotional. And in this future of autonomous cars and ride-sharing cars, you're really removing the emotion out of it. You know, I can't think of the last time, or any time furthermore, where somebody has said, oh, I'm going to go to Cars and Coffee so I can go look at Tesla Model S's and, you know, a Via or Optimus Ride shuttle or a Chevy Bolt, right? They want to take a look at exotics. They want to take a look at classic cars, project cars. So you do got to wonder that if you fast forward to the future, to the dealership of the future, if all of a sudden customers are faced with this scenario of, well, this is not really what I wanted.
Right. Is it a personal buy or is it a mode of transportation? I feel like cars say a lot about people. And so if you're buying it because you want to show status, or you're buying it because it makes you happy to get in your car and you like things about listening to the radio or how it feels to drive a car, you know, you're probably still want to go test drive cars and you want to be excited about buying it. And I would think you're going to be more excited about showing up and picking things out and having that discussion. But if you're just trying to get from place to place, it matters less. But as we're talking about the dealership of the future and being more of a place to go to get your car serviced, you know, again, I still think that it's, how do you test drive cars? You know, if you're going to keep rebuying the same car, or you're buying the Tesla because it's advertised and you know what you're supposedly getting. But if you're going out to look for a new car, you have to go somewhere to drive the cars, and you're more likely to drive it and then actually make a deal and buy it then than to drive it and then go home. And it's the delayed gratification of then having to compile your car online and, you know, wait months for it to be built.
Well, I think that the idea of test driving a car is probably going to be a smaller part of the equation now. I mean, you know, when you are taking out the emotional element of owning a car, of buying a car, then, you know, that's the whole reason why you do a test drive, is that develops the emotion. And perhaps a workaround test driving car is you may have the dealer bringing you a car to your home or office, or probably even better is to go to an auto show, and you'll probably have to test drive cars at an auto show. So anyhow, listeners, I hope this episode was of great informational value to you. I presume you work in the automotive space, and specifically if you're in the dealership world, if you do have any ideas on improvements that can be made, definitely start jotting it down on paper and look to contact Chase at Fraser McCombs Capital.
Yeah, we raise funds about every 2.5 years. So we're on our second fund. We're 18 months in on the second one. So we'll raise our next fund in about a year.
Okay.
Listeners, be sure you check out the episode page, as it will contain contact information for Chase Fraser and Fraser McCombs Capital. Also, if you visit our YouTube channel, you can hear the unedited interview that I conducted with Chase. And be sure to subscribe so that you can get these episodes weekly delivered to you. Here's what you can expect for the next episode.
The beauty of this program is that you can use it for travel, or you can use it for, like, on demand.
Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 1 of season 3 of the Wisco Weekly Podcast. Would greatly appreciate if you were to share this with a friend. We will be back next week with another episode. And until then, please enjoy the sounds of our featured artist, Deuce Williams, and We Are Young.
Explosions like a heartbeat. Yeah, my mind's keen. Rushes of emotion. Now let's do it again. There's sweetness and adventure without a venture. TV's got your mind stuck on good reality. much more if we live it up. Life is all on schedule, but debt's forever. I send my condolences to the site of the dry. Some say I'm living in the moment. I say motion, I ain't got no potion, but we can touch the sky.